Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And every once in a while, we get moved to talk about those things that move us. But really, folks, you know, we're the only show that reads what the framers actually said. We're the only show that gives you the academic truth, literally giving you the primary source documents of how this nation was framed and how our government is supposed to be behaving. Knowing those things really starts helping change our paradigms, because it takes a long time. It takes a long time to, you know, to go from a heathen to living like a true Christian, you know, living the commandments and understanding and developing, you know, the faith and the conviction that everything you're doing and why this is. So things take time. I don't believe we have a lot of time. So, as you know, what's important, and this is why we're so focused on full compliance of the Constitution, you would be surprised. Stepping in faith in that direction, how many problems will go away? We will literally, I mean, if we got full compliance with the Constitution, we would not see chemtrails anymore. We would not see, you know, all of this warfare being inflicted upon the states and the people. But I digress. The whole point of us giving you this content is so as you, good people, good righteous people, decide to ponder with prayer and learn, pray, act, you know, taking that mode of operandi, then I believe that this is how you get convicted, or you become convinced and, you know, have this galvanized testimony that this is what we need to do. And you can testify to the world. We need to unite on the Constitution. With that, welcome back, Tammy, and welcome back, Sean. And is there any go-backs, you know, that we can kind of explore very quickly if possible? Because bottom line, I would hope to think that as we keep going through these founding documents, it'll help finely tune how we see things panning out. Because, you know, the reality is, and it was brought up yesterday, that why is it that nobody is talking about the Monroe Doctrine? Why is it that here's something that the nation took a stand on to say it is in our interest to make sure, because they saw the evil empires of Europe and how their meddling would be very costly to our liberty. And the truth is, because we continued to maintain open relationships with Britain, who was this huge, corrupt, I'll just say, spying entity. It was literally working throughout the world like China today in spying and intermeddling and undermining by working underground within your society. I mean, Britain was hardcore in America and in the Western Hemisphere. But I think Monroe's... Well, go ahead.
Isn't the Monroe Doctrine one of the things they used to... Didn't they use that justification to go into Venezuela?
You know, I hadn't heard that. So, but you got to remember that I don't have TV. I've only heard a few constitutionalists speak to it, and not one of them listed the Monroe Doctrine as a control. But if the president is bringing that out there, then the reason why these constitutionalists didn't even comment on that is because there is that door. But that door specifically would be going after China, would be going after Russia, and any other nations that are not of the Western Hemisphere that are meddling in Latin America, you know, South America, and so forth. So anyway, anywho, we are covering the Articles of Confederation and the amendments. And actually, the last amendment, the Second Amendment that we covered it wasn't yesterday, the day before that, there was one sentence that we didn't close on, and because I want to just get it closed, we covered it. The last sentence goes as this, and it is to be understood and is hereby agreed and conceded that this article shall be fully and absolutely binding and conclusive when all the states not actually in the possession of the enemy shall enact the same. In other words, if you don't have the enemy in your midst, then you need to be providing, you know, these taxes and so forth, or we will come after you. Because this was the amendment, remember, the last amendment we were covering was the amendment to give Congress coercive powers over the states and citizens of the states. So right here, and this is where I kind of maybe crossed the line in saying that, you know, they were, the other states wouldn't give them this because they were for nefarious reasons, what have you. And I think I broad brushed that, and I think yesterday I kind of cleared the air on that. I do believe that these men really did understand that you, if you have a government and you don't want it to succeed, you don't empower it. But if you have a government that is, you know, really going to serve you, and for it to serve you, you have to empower, then we've got to empower it. We've got to give it the power to do what it needs to do that we're asking it to do. I mean, that was literally the conversations that were occurring in the ratification base. Why do we have a general government if we won't empower it? We're just wasting their time, our resources, everything. So it was hard for the anti-federalists to counter that. The whole point of government is to, you know, regulate those things that have been delegated. Anyway, the next amendment that we are going to cover is the Third Amendment. The Third Amendment is, and this is kind of interesting, this is the committee report on carrying the Confederation into effect and on additional powers needed by Congress to do this. Now, this is only important because, and we can kind of not necessarily worry about reading the whole thing, because they discovered that they put this government together, but they didn't empower the government to buy things or do things, to possess property, to, you know, go out and buy, you know, papers, desks, and things that they would need. So I guess when you were elected by, imagine this, you get appointed, because these guys were appointed by the state legislature, so that's how this was all working. And so you got appointed to go do good things in Continental Congress in 1784, and you show up and you realize you don't have a desk, you don't have a chair. Huh, you got to be kidding me. Come to find out, they didn't have the ability to spend money on those types of things because it wasn't delegated. This is why the Necessary and Proper Clause was added at the very end of the enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8. And this is why they explained that whole thing. If they need to make a uniform rule of naturalization, then they need to be able to have the tools, the resources, and mechanisms of being able to actually act those regulations out and to enforce those regulations, not necessarily use the word enforce, to bring them to fruition. A good case in point would be, let me see, the minting of coin, the minting of gold and silver coin. Therefore, they would need to have a mint. That means that they would have to have a building where they could actually, you know, basically refine gold and silver and mint coins. So it would only make sense that they would have the needful buildings necessary in minting coins. That means that they can go out and do that. That Necessary and Proper Clause allowed them to do those things that were necessary and proper. But in context to the Articles of Confederation, they realized that there were a lot of things that they needed to do. So there's a list in this, and actually, let's do this by fives. And Sean, if you would do the first five, and then Tammy, you do the next five. And then Sean, you can do the next five. And then Tammy, you can do the next five. So that way we can kind of show, you know, how short-sighted they were when they were putting this government together, that they couldn't do these fundamental things. Okay? And did I welcome everybody back? I think we did, but anyway. Sean?
Yeah, I think
okay.
So.
Great, great. Sean, if you could, let's do the first five. Thank you.
All righty, sir. One, by adjusting the mode and proportion of the militia aid to be furnished to a sister state laboring under invasion. Two, by describing the privileges and immunities to which the citizens of one state are entitled in another. Three, by setting forth the conditions upon which a criminal is to be delivered up by one state upon the demand of the executive of another. Four, by declaring the method of exemplifying records and the operation of the acts and judicial proceedings of the courts of one state contravening those of the states in which they are arrested. Five, by a form to be observed in the notification of the appointment or suspension of delegates.
Okay, so if you remember going through the Articles of Confederation, these were some of the things that they had the responsibility of doing, like the delivering up of a criminal from one state to another. So the Continental Congress had this responsibility to ensure that this was done. And so they were supposed to set up the conditions, but it didn't list those things. And so apparently, and we're reading these because I'm guessing that there was pushback to say, hey, you can't say that. You can't do it. Well, it's in there, but it doesn't say that. You may have the ability to ensure that it happens, but you can't get involved or what have you. So they literally created this laundry list of shortcomings. Tammy, let's go through the next five.
By an oath to be taken by every delegate against secret trust of salaries. 7, by specifying the privileges of delegates from arrest, imprisonment, questioning, the free speech and debates in Congress, saving as well their answerability to their constituents as protesting against the authority of individual legislatures to absolve them from obligations to secrecy. 8, by instituting an oath to be taken by the officers of the U.S. or any of them against presence, emolument, office, or title of any kind from a king, prince, or foreign state. 9, by one universal plan of equipping, training, and governing the militia. And 10, by a scheme for estimating the value of all land within each state granted to or surveyed for any person or persons together with the buildings and improvement thereon, and the appointment of certain periods at which payment shall be made.
Okay, so interestingly enough, they brought up the oath a couple of times. They brought up the fact that they had no control over the militia, really. I mean, do you remember anywhere where they really had that level of control? The general government was basically, I'll just say, they didn't have any stake in dictating what the levels of discipline, what the levels of forces needed to be by each state. So a lot of shortcomings. Okay, so the next 10, or the next 5, I mean. Go ahead.
11, by establishing rules for captures on land and the distribution of the sales. 12, by ascertaining the jurisdiction of Congress in territorial questions. 13, by erecting a mint. 14, by fixing a standard of weights and measures throughout the U.S. 15, by appointing a committee for Indian affairs.
Okay, so interestingly enough, I don't remember them having the authority to coin money in the Articles of Confederation. But there was a need for that. And as a matter of fact, the nations that were being paid, they wanted to be paid in gold and silver. They didn't want this script that was coming up out of Rhode Island. They didn't want this worthless paper. Money talks, or I should say, that core standard of what is a valued currency was gold and silver, and maybe other precious metals. But that being said, Tammy, let's go through the last ones, the five. Actually, go through the rest of them because they're all one-liners. Go ahead.
Okay. By regulating the post office, by establishing a census of white inhabitants in each state, by publishing the Journal of Congress monthly, by registering seamen, by liquidation of old accounts against the U.S., and by providing means of
animadverting
on delinquent states.
Okay, so fundamental stuff that you would think, but because they didn't have that necessary and proper clause, because they didn't have the ability to basically say, we're going to be empowered to do this, but we didn't create and we didn't understand all the things we would need to do it. Now that we have to do it, we need to come back and say, we got to spend money on this. So we got to pay for this. We got to requisition this. We got, anyway. So this is just, again, I talk about, you know, the Articles of Confederation were done very with haste, stress, duress, what have you, and that it was, look at the United States Constitution, and other than, you know, done in 4 months, and other than actually having the Bill of Rights added to it quickly, because everybody felt more comfortable having these, you know, further restrictive clauses added to the Constitution, for the most part, in everything that it did was complete and concise. There was really, the next amendment that came out was the 11th Amendment, where they pulled back the federal jurisdiction, you know, between a state and people of another state or foreigners, so forth and so on. So, I mean, those things were already kind of grumbled about during the ratification debate, so there was no surprise there. The 12th Amendment was, well, after finding out that the Electoral College had some problems to it, they fixed that with the 12th Amendment. Other than that, I mean, the 13th Amendment didn't come to be until 1812. So when we covered the Constitution and its amendments, the Constitution, not like the Articles of Confederation, it was bringing forth all sorts of amendments to it, just showing how inept and impotent it was. Hopefully that makes sense. So the next amendment that we want to just look at a cursory view, as we look at the Fourth Amendment, this amendment is the amendment to share expenses according to population. In other words, this is an idea that they came up with a good way of creating an apportionment based on heads per state. In other words, if they look at the nation, let's just say they need $9 million and they have 9 million people. Well, let's just add $1 to every head, and we will distribute that burden out to each state, give us a dollar for each head. They would get their $9 million. And that way, their burden would be equal, placed upon the states equally, as well as the burden would be paid for, because it would meet the need of the $9 million. So, for the most part, this was just one of those things to go, huh, it's sad that they didn't have the foresight in defining these things and having to go through, you know, the needs. Because some of the things I think you could tell they definitely learned from some of these amendments like this one regarding uniformity and those types of things. Because even the members of Continental Congress were criticized for the amendments that they were seeking, just due to the fact that, you know, they were still a little short-sighted, which is why when the framers were looking and created the Constitution, many of these men had those, I'll just say, either conversations or they had those thoughts already. Well, that's kind of short-sighted. We need to make sure that the tax burden will always be equally applied, so each of the states would have an equal, I'll just say, level of punishment, level of, you know, blessings, glory, whatever. So the next amendment, which is the Fifth Amendment, is the one that grants temporary powers to collect import duties and request for supplementary funds. And they actually throw it in here as far as, you know, times and dates and I think dollars and so forth. This is a kind of a long amendment, but for the most part, the way I see this amendment is, it's interesting, but it's And it was necessary because, again, they just didn't have a mechanism of going to the states and saying, give us the money, give us the support. And unfortunately, I think Rhode Island, I hate to say this, you know, there's a lot of times when somebody doesn't want to say the bad thing, but they don't, because they know that that one person that's notorious of saying that one bad thing is sitting there, and they will actually say, no, I'm not going to let you do this. So they don't have to. They can just sit there and let, Rhode Island's going to do that work for us. I don't have to look bad. Rhode Island will look bad, and nothing will be moved forward because this can't be amended because it requires 100% unanimity. We all have to be on board with it. So, anyway, the Sixth Amendment is one we're actually going to dive into, and this is the grant of power, because this is something kind of unique. They're talking about regulating commerce, and so the question is, when we look at the regulation of commerce between foreign goods or foreign nations and the United States, we know that's currently in the Constitution. We also know that the framers did not include the ability to regulate commerce within the states. Only commerce among the states and or commerce going out from the state to the foreign states. So when we go through this, the question is, were they looking to really regulate commerce within the states and create more of a mercantile system, or were they looking to actually, you know, regulate commerce in a general sense? Let's find out. So, Sean, why don't you read the first, I think, because Tammy read the last one. So if you read the first paragraph, sure. And we'll take it from there. Go ahead.
We are on the fifth, right? Okay, grant of temporary power to collect import duties and request for supplementary funds.
No,
18.
We're on the sixth. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I thought
talking about. Yeah, I kind of covered the fourth and fifth. We just kind of generalized. The sixth one is what we're reading. Yeah. Thank you.
Alrighty, sir. Temporary power to regulate commerce.
Yes.
The trust reposed in Congress renders it their duty to be attentive to the conduct of foreign nations, and to prevent or restrain as far may be all such proceedings as might prove injurious to the United States. The situation of commerce at this time claims the attention of the several states, and few objects of greater importance can present themselves to their notice. The fortune of every citizen is interested in the success thereof, for it is a constant source of wealth and incentive to industry, and the value of our produce and our land must ever rise or fall in proportion to the prosperous or adverse state of trade. Already has Great Britain adopted regulations destructive of our commerce with her West India Islands. There is reason to expect that measures so unequal and so little calculated to promote mercantile intercourse would not be preserved in by an enlightened nation. But these measures are growing into system. It would be the duty of Congress, as it is their wish, to meet the attempts of Great Britain with similar restrictions on her commerce, but their powers on this head are not explicit, and the propositions made by the legislatures of the several states render it necessary to take the general sense of the Union on this subject.
Okay, so stopping right there, Tammy can pick up these other paragraphs, but hold on here. What kind of regulations are they looking for? Are they, because we're going to go into break in just a half a minute as well, is this regulating foreign commerce or regulating commerce within the states or among the states? What kind of commerce regulation are we talking about?
With foreign nations.
Clearly. Okay, so they're not seeking power to regulate commerce within the states. And right now, they didn't even have the adequate ability to regulate commerce amongst the foreign nations. So they were just saying, hey, give us some power so that we can actually do our job for you in regulating this foreign commerce. So with that, we got a break here. When we come back, I'll let Tammy go through the next few paragraphs. But anyway, for the most part, this is not a grab to basically seize control over the commerce within the states. That's the whole point. When we read these things, you got to understand what it is they're looking for. So we'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so Tammy, when we kind of look at what's left, go ahead and read the next, well, that's that middle paragraph is kind of a single liner. So let's go ahead and read the next three paragraphs, and then we'll let Sean do the second resolved. Okay? All right, thank you.
Okay. Unless the United States and Congress assembled shall be vested with powers competent to the protection of commerce, they can never command reciprocal advantages in trade, and without these, our foreign commerce must decline and eventually be annihilated. Hence, it is necessary that the states should be explicit and fixed on some effectual mode by which foreign commerce, not founded on principles of equality, may be restrained. That the United States may be enabled to secure such terms, they have resolved that it be, and it hereby is recommended to the legislatures of the several states, to vest the United States in Congress assembled for the term of 15 years with power to prohibit any goods, wares, or merchandise from being imported into or exported from any of the states, and vessels belonging to or navigated by the subjects of any power with whom these states shall not have formed treaties of commerce.
Okay, so, again, it's really looking to give them teeth and strength in holding foreign powers, you know, accountable and protecting the states and the union, their sovereignty. So go ahead, Sean, with the remaining.
That the United resolved that it be and it hereby is recommended to the legislatures of the several states to vest the United States in Congress assembled for the term of 15 years with the power of prohibiting the subjects of any foreign state, kingdom, or empire, unless authorized by treaty, from importing into the United States any goods, wares, or merchandise which are not the produce or manufacture of the dominions of the sovereign whose subjects they are, provided that to all of the facts the United States and Congress assembled in pursuance of the above powers, the assent of 9 states shall be necessary.
Okay, so only the assent of 9 states. It's not like they're amending the Constitution. This is just one of those trade deals. Okay, and basically being able to execute these powers. But as we go into the next one, which is the 7th Amendment, to grant commercial powers to Congress. Let's look at what this one's granting. And so, Tammy, go ahead and read the first sentence, and let's see here. If you go down to, if you look on the far right side of the paragraph, about 6-7 lines down, it talks about foreign power, semicolon. Let's have you cut it off at the semicolon there, and then Sean can kind of close out the remainder of the paragraph. Thanks.
Okay. That the first paragraph of the 9th of the Articles of Confederation be altered so as to read thus, I don't know what that viz means, but
okay.
United States in Congress assembled shall have the sole and exclusive right and power of determining on peace and war, except in cases mentioned in the 6th article, of sending and receiving ambassadors entering into treaties and alliances, of regulating the trade of the states as well as with foreign nations as with each other, and of laying such imposts and duties upon imports and exports as may be necessary for the purpose, provided that the citizens of the state shall in no instance be subjected to pay higher imposts and duties than those imposed on the subjects of foreign powers.
Okay. Go ahead, Sean. So then we'll ask, what kind of powers are they looking for here? So let's go ahead and read the last of this. Thanks.
Provided also that the legislative power of the several states shall not be restrained from prohibiting the importation or exportation of any species of goods or commodities whatsoever. Provided also that all such duties as may be imposed shall be collected under the authority and accrue to the use of the state in which the same shall be payable. And provided lastly that every act of Congress for the above purpose shall have the assent of 9 states in Congress assembled. Of establishing rules for deciding in all cases what captures on land or water shall be legal, and what manner prizes taken by land or naval forces in the service of the United States shall be divided or appropriated, of granting letters of marque and reprisal in time of peace, appointing courts for the trial of piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, and establishing courts for receiving and determining finally appeals in all cases of captures, provided that no member of Congress shall be appointed judge of any of the said courts.
Okay, so what kind of commerce are they looking to regulate here?
Foreign commerce.
Well, are they not looking for commerce and regulating commerce within the states itself?
I saw a part where they were talking about that they were required to get the, what was the word they use?
Uh-huh.
And that they can't be charged more than what they're charging for foreign power.
Okay, so it's towards the top, and it says entering into treaties and alliances of regulating the trade of the states as well with foreign nations. So they were actually looking for a little more power than just regulating trade among the states. They were actually looking to regulate the trade of the states, which means not among the states.
Foreign powers.
Yes, as well with each other. No. It says of regulating the trade of the states as well with foreign nations as with each other. Correct. So in other words, getting into their knickers as far as regulating the states specifically. So I think that this was actually, because if I remember correctly, during the notes on the convention, there was a prevailing thought that Congress should actually have more, because, again, the very beginning of the convention, they wanted to have a lot of the states that had power, wanted to have more regulatory control over the states. The little states ended up prevailing to say, no, you're taking away our sovereignty. It took a long time to change that paradigm. I mean, the little states were, at several points in time, they once said, we don't trust you big states, because out of the 12 states that were there, half of them were little. And then there were some sentiments shared by some of the bigger states, Pennsylvania being one of them, because they weren't a big trade nation. They didn't have ports and so forth other than, you know, the river that, you know, brought up to Philadelphia and so forth. So they didn't have a lot of seagoing commerce. So as you look during the Constitutional Convention, there were a lot of prevailing thoughts that changed over time. I think that this concept of having a very vigorous and powerful central government in regulating all the commerce was more of what they wanted to do, and in opening those doors, or at least presenting that type of power. This, of course, never got amended, but in the prevailing debates in the convention, calmer heads, or I should say, the concept of a more limited and defined government and allowing states to literally freely create their own products without being encumbered by one, the federal government, or by other states, that the role of this new federal government would be one of a referee not a regulator. That their function of regulating commerce among the states was more for that, like I said, for accord or for peace purposes, to ensure that states weren't conducting economic warfare, those types of things with each other, and so forth. And that's one of the reasons why there's also the limits of the ability for port states to charge tonnage and those types of things that were seem excessive, that the Constitution limited to only those necessary charges that the states, you know, the ports and those types of things could assess to say, hey, we're putting this kind of a tax on everything coming in because it's putting wear and tear on our wharves, our piers, our our berthing for the ships, all that type of stuff. So, again, they wanted to make sure that the states weren't, you know, serfs to the other states because they had ports, but they wanted to also make sure that they couldn't take advantage of the interior states. So the paradigm really did start shifting for, you know, more of a limited and defined as they went further forward in establishing the Senate, maintaining state sovereignty that way, because the Senate, I don't think, was presented or it became a paradigm until the, help me out here, it's at the tip of my tongue, it's the Connecticut Compromise, the Roger Sherman Compromise. If you look at when Roger Sherman introduced that compromise, I think it was towards the end of June. So they had been debating, you know, from May into throughout a whole month of even looking at this concept, where that became the compromise that the little states stayed. They said, okay, you've got our interest now. We're going to have control over this second legislative body. Okay, we're interested now. Because everything else was pointing to the appointment of the Senate, because they were going to have a bicameral legislative body. And the appointment of the Senate originally was going to be done by the House legislature. In other words, it was they that would choose who would be best. And if you look at it that way, the House was actually more representative of the bigger states. So in other words, the Senate would have been had, the bigger states would have had far more control in the House of the Senate than the smaller states. So that's, there was, these are these constant tensions between these states and, you know, these differences, because the little states, as it was Delaware, I actually have it in an article of the guy that said it. He literally said, hey, we don't trust you big states. You know, you're looking to basically overrun us and take us over. And so there we have that. Anyway, it's the same thing with admitting states into the union. There were a lot of what I would call repugnant ideas coming from these people, because I don't think, I think based on the paradigms of the South, based on the paradigms of the North and so forth, they were that vastly different that it took a while for them to discuss the merits and the potential problems of doing what they were doing. Because, you know, they were completely clueless of understanding that if they would have actually started admitting states into the Union that would not have equal footing, that would be basically subjects of the original states, that was just begging for another revolution. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Okay. And so, you know, these guys ended up seeing the error of our ways, or their ways. And so, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why when they all were really wrapping up and done, how they kind of witnessed the whole transformation of each other, you know, in shifting their paradigms for this really, this true common cause of liberty, that became that foundation of brotherhood towards the very end of this. It's not like they came to, you know, a kumbaya moment at all. I mean, the slave states were still hated. The Puritans still hated the heathens. But they really came to this common understanding that, you know, this federal government was going to be limited and defined, and everything else was left to the states to do unto their own subjects as they want to. So, with that, let's read the last amendment, because this is the eighth and final amendment that the Continental Congress submitted. Now, this one was basically proposed in August of 1786. That was right at the time when the Annapolis meeting was about to occur. They had already had, I forget, I think it was in Annapolis as well, a meeting prior to try to get enough states to attend to try to deal with these amendments. Okay, so it became such a problem that they had they were coming up with the Eighth Amendment, and the other seven hadn't even been addressed yet. And as we look at the Seventh Amendment, I mean, that was 1775. So that was, or 1785, I'm sorry. So that was a year prior, but they still hadn't got any headway on those first seven. And so as they were coming up with this eighth one, I forget what states kind of drove this convention or this delegation of states to sit down and say, look, you know, we're not working together. We need to, you know, go back to the drawing board and have a convention of figuring out how to fix the Articles of Confederation, which, again, there was such poor attendance at that first one. They said, okay, we'll have the Annapolis meeting. So we're going to cover these meetings, by the way, folks. And so when we get into the Annapolis meeting, which is the one we're actually going to cover, I don't think I have any documentation on the first one, but we know that it was kind of a bust because not too many states attended. And if I remember correctly, we'll see if my memory, because we'll dive into this, so I'll go ahead and lay it out there. I believe in the Annapolis Convention, there was only four or five states that showed up out of 13. Still wasn't a majority. It still didn't have real quorum. But instead of going home, this is where Hamilton met Madison, and the other gentleman, I think Sherman might have been there, but this is where some really good thinking men, you know, came up with the good verbiage of justifying to Continental Congress. The Continental Congress needed to urge the states to convene a convention in May 1787. i.e. the Constitutional Convention, to deal with the exigencies of the Union. So we're going to go through all these documents, but my point is here we're looking at the very last amendment, and we're looking at, you know, this grand committee, and so I believe this grand committee was kind of like the initial, but this was not the, I'll talk it, albeit the Annapolis Committee. But let's go ahead and read this. And Sean, if you want to read the first part going to Article 14, and then Tammy, you go ahead and read Article 14. But Sean, go ahead and kick it off.
The Grand Committee, consisting of Mr. Livermore, Mr. Dane, Mr. Manning, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Smith, Mr. Sims, Mr. Pettit, Mr. Henry, Mr. Lee, Mr. Bloodworth, Mr. Pinckney, and Mr. Houston, appointed to report such amendments to the Confederation and such resolutions as it may be necessary to recommend to the several states for the purpose of obtaining from them such powers as will render the federal government adequate to the ends for which it was instituted. Beg leave to submit the following report to consideration of Congress. Resolved, that it be recommended to the legislatures of the several states to adopt the following articles as articles of the Confederation and to authorize their delegates in Congress to sign and ratify the same severally as they shall be adopted, to wit.
Okay, go ahead, Tammy.
The United States and Congress assembled shall have the sole and exclusive power of regulating the trade of the state. Ooh. Wow, okay. As well as with foreign nations, as with each other, and of laying such prohibitions and such imposts and duties upon imports and exports as may be necessary for the purpose, provided the citizens of the state shall in no instance be subjected to pay higher duties and imposts than those imposed on the subjects of foreign powers, provided also that all such duties as may be imposed, shall be collected under such regulations as the United States and Congress assembled, shall establish consistent with the constitutions of the states respectively, and to accrue to the use of the state in which the same shall be payable, provided also that the legislative power of the several states shall not be restrained from laying embargoes in times of scarcity, and provided lastly that every act of Congress for the above purpose shall have the assent of nine states in Congress assembled, and in that proportion when there shall be more than 13 in the Union.
Okay. So you kind of had to taste those words that they were looking for some exclusive and sole power, huh? Okay, so
whisked in there.
Okay, so let's keep this in mind. Look at the names of the people that were part of this committee. Mr. Livermore, Mr. Dane, Mr. Manning, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Smith, Mr. Symes, Mr. Petit, Mr. Henry, and Mr. Lee, Mr. Bloodworth, and Mr. Pinckney, and Mr. Houston. Now, if somebody went and actually identified who these delegates were and what state they were from, I can tell you Henry was from Virginia, and Mr. Lee was from Virginia. If you look, and you actually look at what these people were asking, and then you go look and see their positions during the ratification debates of the Constitution, you're going to ask yourself, huh, they wanted this amendment, but they balked at the Constitution? Hmm. Anyway, okay, so Sean, let's go ahead and read what we call the next article, Article 15.
I don't like Article 15.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's sure. A military thing.
Yeah. Oh, I see. The 50, yeah.
Right. That their respective states may be induced to perform the several duties mutually and solemnly agreed to be performed by their federal compact, and to prevent unreasonable delays in any state in furnishing her just proportion of the common charges of the Union when called upon. And those essential evils which have heretofore often arisen to the Confederacy from such delays, it is agreed that whenever a requisition shall be made by Congress upon the several states on the principles of the Confederation for their quotas of the common charges or land forces of the Union, Congress shall fix the proper periods when the states shall pass legislative acts complying therewith and give full and complete effect to the same. And if any state shall neglect seasonably to pass such acts, such state shall be charged with an additional sum to her quota called for from the time she may be required to pay or furnish the same, which additional sum or charge shall be at the rate of 10 cents per annum, 10% on annum on her said quota. And if the requisition shall be for land forces, and any state shall neglect to furnish a quota in the time the average expense of such quota shall be ascertained by Congress, and such state shall be charged therewith, or with the average expense of what she may be deficient, and in addition thereto, from the time her forces were required to be ready to act in the field, with a farther sum, which sum shall be at the rate of 12 cents per annum on the amount of such expense.
Okay, so, wow, they were really looking for, I don't want to use the word, but I'm going to have to, some really draconian measures to give this central government, you know, some very coercive powers.
Yeah, where's my money?
And so, again, keep in mind the names, and then keep in mind all of a sudden when they see some of these things actualized in the Constitution, some of these guys all of a sudden got scruples and said, no, we don't want to do this. When you look at what they were asking to do, that's what I'm saying. Keep in mind Henry, because we're going to cover Henry and what he says. Actually, we'll skim over it, but we'll cover a few things that he says. And I'm going, wow, I mean, Henry was okay with this thing called the Articles of Confederation and this centralized government over war and all of that. And I'm going, but he wasn't okay with the U.S. Constitution. Interesting. Just keep in mind as we move forward and these names start to pop up here and there. Okay, so the next article, Tanny, 16.
And that the resources of any state which may be negligent in furnishing her just proportion of the common expense of the Union may in a reasonable time be applied, it is further agreed that if any state shall so neglect, as aforesaid, to pass laws in compliance with the said requisition, to adopt measures to give the same full effect for the space of 10 months, and it shall then or afterwards be found that a majority of the states have passed such laws and adopted such measures, the United States and Congress assembled shall have full power and authority to levy, assess, and collect all sums and duties with which any such state, so neglecting to comply with the requisition, may stand charged on the same by the laws and rules by which the last state tax next preceding such requisition in such state was levied, assessed, and collected, to apportion the sum so required on the towns or counties in such state, to order the sum so appointed to be assessed by the assessors of such last state tax, and the said assessments to be committed to the collectors of the same last state tax to collect, to make return of such assessments and commitments to the Treasurer of the United States, who by himself or his deputy, when directed by Congress, shall have power to recover the monies of such collectors for the use of the United States in the same manner and under the same penalties the state taxes are recovered and collected by the treasurers of the respective states and the several towns or counties respectively shall be responsible for the conduct of said assessors and collectors, and in case there shall be any vacancy in any of said offices of assessors or collectors by death, removal, refusal to serve, resignation, or otherwise, then other fit persons shall be chosen to fill such vacancy in the usual manner in such town or county within 20 days after notice of the assessment, and in case of towns or counties, any assessors, collectors, or sheriffs shall neglect or refuse to do their duty, Congress shall have the same rights and powers to compel them to do the same that the state may have in assessing and collecting state taxes.
Ah, okay, so...
like a really long sentence.
So, all right. Do we see this problem of trying to help the union succeed? And the interesting thing is, Henry was, I just think of so many things when I think of Henry's arguments. There was no Bill of Rights to the Articles of Confederation, correct?
Right.
There was none. And all of a sudden, these guys are wanting these powers and so forth. Wouldn't they have been equally concerned with the Bill of Rights by giving them these kinds of powers? So the point is that I just look at how they were going down this path with this amendment. And then all of a sudden, you know, when the Constitutional Convention came in, it was like the devil incarnate came out of these people to say, thou shalt not, convert. We're running out of time. We just got a few minutes left, or a few seconds left. So we can take this back up in our next meeting. So that way we can kind of, you know, do the final analysis on what the problems of the Confederation were, how they couldn't get these things done. And I think one of the reasons why the sentiments going into the Constitutional Convention was to try to bring some of these ideas, and as they chewed them out, they realized some of these ideas weren't necessarily the best. But that being said, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.